Views and news with Clarence Ford.
Share your perspective.
Only on Cape Talk.
Welcome, Gail. It's good to have you.
Very good to be here, Clarence.
I want to know more about the... There's a whole lot of sporting bets operators that are springing up.
Really has. Online betting, online gambling has really seen a rise in the last 5 to 7 years. Sporting bets been operational for about 13 years, but we're seeing so much more of the traditional land-based gambling hubs are now being converted to online. A lot of international sports books are now being licensed in South Africa. We have multiple provinces who have licenses on offer. And we've certainly seen an uptake in the last 5 years in operators in South Africa.
What kind of revenue accrues to the fiscus because of your operations?
Well, in 2023, we're looking at about $7 billion.
That's from the total industry. Sports gambling only?
It would be sports and casino. Okay. So online casino is also legal in South Africa now. Online slots and live games.
Yeah.
So a combination of both is certainly seen an uptake in gross gambling revenue.
Before we look at the nuts and bolts of the industry and understand its presence more so, are we having more problem gamblers come with this plethora of choices that has come with time?
Absolutely. Where you see a gambling hub, whether it's online or on the ground, we certainly do see people who are more vulnerable to the situation. I think that when it comes to the online space as well, obviously we're not... you're able to do it in the comfort of your own home alone. So someone who is vulnerable, there are loopholes there that they can sort of avoid the social contact where someone in the know could assist them. In the same way, from an online perspective, the operator who's licensed here does have more access to controls online should they take the steps to adhere to them.
Yeah. So I guess the counterbalance is the contribution to the fiscus and the problem gaming, that the problem gambling that comes with it. How do you measure that?
We can measure it online. I would say just knowing, first of all, the amount of accounts that do get closed, people asking for the accounts to get blocked or paused. AI has assisted quite significantly as well, where we're able to detect inconsistent or erratic play from someone who typically plays in a certain style. Also, we'll notice certain odd hours that they play or limits that have increased dramatically. And so operators who are responsible, as you say, should then take preventative action for that. Although, while some of us do, you know, it can't be said for the entire industry.
So you're saying the algorithms automatically kick in?
Automatically alerts our compliance officer. And I can only speak on behalf of Sportingbet. The National Gambling Foundation as well have access to our database. And so once a player chooses to self-exclude, our operators are then legally obliged to report that account on a national level, and the national regulator then distributes that throughout the country.
And before the fact, you can flag a possible problem child and intervene.
Absolutely, and we should be doing that. You can see very clearly if someone plays with, say, 10 rand in the space of a month or 2 months, suddenly now he's playing with 10,000 rand. That kind of variation is problematic. And can and should be shut down immediately. At the very least, the player should be reached out to.
Okay, so normally in industry, if there's competition, then the consumer benefits. Is that the same instance for the gamer, for the person that is playing with all of these choices? Is there like a better option?
I would say that the best option is the safer option. Obviously, as a gambler, if you're a problematic gambler, safety is not necessarily the primary focus for you. But in terms of the amount of games available, all operators offer very similar amounts of games in terms of odds. It's quite similarly priced up.
Okay.
I would say that it just depends on the personal preference and the user experience on platforms.
So it's not kind of odds based.
I wouldn't say that it's one operator has vastly improved odds than another.
Because there was some regulation, especially in terms of casino, that governs odds, does it not?
Absolutely. At the end of the day, from a regulatory perspective, again, incentivizing or the over incentivization of playing on a specific platform because there's an expectation of higher wins is just not legal. Mm. It's not allowed.
But is it mandatory for you to, you can't with sports betting, but I guess with casino betting, is it mandatory for there to be a percentage winnings versus a percentage that accrues to the house?
I mean, certainly the back end of these casino games all work on an algorithm. We don't have we internally can't manipulate it. It is we work through a third party supplier, and that third party supplier is beholden to the regulator. So all of these suppliers are tested quite stringently, have to comply with certain technicalities and report directly to the regulator.
Okay, you've mentioned that in the past couple of years there's been a whole lot of competition that entered into the market. You mentioned that you were there 13 years ago. It sounds like really early in the game.
Very early in the game. Sportingbet was the first online only operator in South Africa. Since then, as you know, many of the land-based casinos and land-based sports betting operators have migrated to the online space. And the growth really in this industry lives online.
Oh, wow. Okay. So you're saying brick and mortar casinos are going to be no more?
Oh, it's a hesitant thing to say.
Less overheads.
I would, certainly less overheads. We actually had the discussion a few weeks ago, is that there's still an entertainment value to actually going into a casino, like dressing up for the night and playing. But in terms of regularity of play and the entertainment, taking it into your own home, I would say that we've seen a vast uptake in the onboarding on the online side of things.
Okay, and I would imagine there are people that are looking to usurp the regulations as well, to operate under the radar clandestinely. Are there those two?
Yeah, unfortunately, it's a problem that has infiltrated South Africa and Africa as a whole. We call them grey market operators who are unlicensed, which means that they are not beholden to any of the tax implications. They don't pay tax in South Africa, and they don't have to abide by our regulations. There's no protection from a safer or responsible gambling perspective. Unfortunately, they have infiltrated the market.
Okay, let's understand your business. Now we're going to get into the juicy bit. Okay, Manchester United plays Liverpool.
Should we say Arsenal play Man City, since I'm an Arsenal fan and I'm invested in this weekend's outcome?
I honestly don't care who plays and who wins and who loses. So you choose it. You choose it. Do you have to pay licensing to those clubs when you kind of offering wages?
So our software partner is an Entain Group. They're a global company, and they pay licensing fees towards the FA, so the English Federation of Football. They pay licensing agreements to all leagues, and it is for those who do watch football, you see sports betting on every the jersey, front jersey of many clubs. You see sports betting advertised in football stadiums, so it has brought an enormous revenue to across all sporting codes.
So you're playing the football league in England. I don't know. You know what they call. What are they called?
The FA.
Okay, so you're paying the FA for your Arsenal game versus...
So it wouldn't be us per se. Yeah. The FA would license
your
agreements
end.
Out. Okay. And again, through third-party operators, licenses are paid.
And they license you in turn to
yes.
do it. Okay, I got that. Okay, so there are other additional overheads that you consider. Just how big is that kind of gambling? Is the FA like the biggest... interest in
for Sportingbet, soccer is our bread and butter.
Okay. Like international soccer,
English soccer in particular. South Africans are very knowledgeable when it comes to to soccer. I will say, though, South Africans will take a punt on any league in the world. We've seen Vietnamese leagues. We've seen Philippines. You know, any league that's playing that can stretch the odds a bit more. And not from a, not from a place of just trying their luck, but actually from a place of knowledge. They read up on scores, they check form, and we've seen some incredible big winners based off knowledge when it comes to sport.
And sporting bets is relatively new, sports betting relatively new to South Africa, but we've heard Hansie talk about, talk about it a long time ago.
Broke my heart.
Well, it does suggest that there is mischief within the game, that, that they can, with bookmakers, kind of create a fix that can be really profitable.
It's certainly something that was more prevalent in the past. I think with online betting in particular, it's very noticeable when a player starts making decisions in this day and age that can affect the outcome of a game. And it's something that every league in the world keeps an eye on.
Yeah, and obviously, I mean, Waleed was just talking to me about cricket betting, going for a duck or bowled in the third ball of the 10th over kind of stuff. The odds, very lucrative odds.
Very lucrative odds. And what we're finding now is, in terms of live betting on a sport like cricket, with all these Premier League, IPLs, Pakistan League, there are so many variations of bets that happen during a game that players are able to take bets on quite minute outcomes.
You said you got $7 billion in revenue to the fiscus. What percentage of revenue does that constitute, or is it a percentage of profit?
No, that would be gross gambling revenue and across all operators. I'm not 100% sure.
I'm trying to understand what total revenue of the industry is. Do you have a sense of that?
No.
Okay. But it is always in favor of the house, is it not?
It is always in favor of the house. I would say sport betting, like I said before, there isn't certain knowledge that comes with it. So, for example, the Rugby World Cup in 2023, towards the end of last year, every single operator in this country lost a significant amount of money because South Africans were inherently patriotic from before the first ball was kicked. And many South Africans bet on the Springboks winning this one. So whether it's by a point or by a mile, the outcome was the outcome.
And the odds were high at the start.
Yeah. So when it comes to that sort of sports betting, there is a bit more knowledge that goes into the bet. Whereas obviously with casino, there is the variation for a chance is much less.
What is your typical demographic and maybe even psychographic that participates with this form of gaming?
Interestingly, our demographic has changed significantly in the past, I would say 3 years. So when I first joined the industry in 2018, there was easily 90% male demographic across multiple SEMs in this country. Now we're seeing closer to 40% female rise in the gambling space. A lot of that is due to the online casino and online slots, and then also the rise of women's sports in this country, and women having more of a vested interest in the sports bet side of things.
Okay, and in terms of income brackets, how would you place those people?
Again, it varies. At Sporting Bet, our income bracket is higher than norm. It's just the sort of the our marketing strategy that's targeted towards that. But I would say income brackets, really, I've seen go from the smallest. Many operators, they live in the 10 Rand bet, the 5 Rand bet, the 10 Rand bets. And on the converse side, there are many big punters who are literally betting hundreds of thousands of rands on one bet.
Okay, now you were talking about responsibility that comes with the industry. It is formalized, is it not? Is it self-regulated?
It is formalized. So through the Western Cape Racing and Gambling Board, that's where Sporting Bet is licensed, and multiple regulators within this country, there's a very strict guideline as to what operators can and cannot do and how we push down that responsibility onto our punters. But at the same time, if Sporting Bet was to close one account, what's stopping that person from going to another sports book? So the South African Responsible Gambling Foundation, they are the foundation where we report in closing the closing of account, and it's their responsibility to then
and you contribute to that foundation or that association as well.
So there is a 1% of gross gambling revenue that's taxed on the sports book that goes directly to responsible gambling.
I've got Larry on the line from Gamblers Anonymous. Larry, welcome.
Hi.
Larry, you've been listening to the conversation that I've been having with Gail Hodges, head of acquisition at Sporting Bet. It sounds as if they take their responsibility seriously.
So I've got a few comments to make. First of all, I just wanted to emphasize that the views that I express are purely my own. Gamblers Anonymous generally does not express views on any topic apart from the issues around people that have a desire to stop gambling. I've been part of the Gamblers Anonymous network for over a decade, and I weekly encounter people that reach out to us who have a gambling problem. My perceptions are as follows, is that gambling is one of those, let's call them those pastimes which can be grouped with things like smoking and alcohol, which, in my opinion, if done in moderation, there is absolutely nothing wrong, I guess, with having the odd cigarette. Not that I'm a smoker.
Yeah, maybe you should exclude smoking from that equation.
But you know, I'm happy to go out to a braai and have a beer because I don't have I can have one beer and stop. But for a problem alcoholic, it's a problem, and the same applies to gamblers. That people can go to a casino and take their 100 rand or whatever, or go online or go to Sporting Bet and bet their 100 rand on their Manchester City Arsenal game, and they'll win or lose, and they'll have the bragging rights, etc. And in my opinion, there's nothing really wrong with that. The problem is that when it becomes a compulsion, where people almost are unable they literally can't stop. I had one guy a few years ago that said to me, he came out of a Gamblers Anonymous meeting and his car drove itself to the casino. Those were his words. It's almost like when it becomes a compulsion or an addiction, which is known as a disease, people are unable to stop even if they want to. They put their compulsion to gamble above any other thing, their rent, their maintenance, their food bills. You know, that's when it gets to that point. I guess my issue is from the operator's perspective is I hear the responsibility that has been said about what Sporting Bet is doing, and I commend them for those efforts. I'm seeing the other side of the coin. I'm seeing the people reach out to us to say, and I can tell you in the decade that I've been in meetings, I can tell you not one person has ever told me that a betting operator has closed their accounts. Wow. The only reason that accounts are being closed is because they're making money. Now, I happen to know one or two people that work at probably the biggest sporting operator in the country, and I know that when they see a person regularly making money, they will significantly curtail the size of their bets or stop their account totally. Obviously, these betting operators are in business to make money. So if somebody is making money off them,
Larry,
it would stand to reason. Yeah.
I want to continue this conversation. We've got to take a break for news, and I want to understand. So this is it a personal experience that you've walked?
Yes, absolutely. Okay. I am a recovering gambler, and everyone in the Gamblers Anonymous network are people that are compulsive gamblers.
Okay.
You are with Cape Talk.
Views and news with Clarence Ford.
Okay, welcome back. It is 11:35, our last lap through till 12. We've got Gail Hodges, head of acquisition at Sporting Bet, with us, and we've got Larry from Gamblers Anonymous on the line. Larry makes some allegations there at the industry about you not cancelling people that you should be cancelling. Gail, would you respond?
Well,
yeah, I'm happy to respond, Larry. Of course, it's a very, very serious allegation. I certainly don't think all operators are holding the standard I know for a fact that at Sporting Bet we do close accounts, whether asked for outright or not. We are monitoring interactions with our customer service. Like I said previously, we're monitoring bet history or erratic betting. So from our perspective, certainly it is part of our compliance protocol. It's not necessarily something that all operators are doing. So certainly it's a very serious allegation, but an important one, I think, to raise.
Is it possible, Larry, that some of the brands are maybe a little more scrupulous about their responsibility to their punters?
Absolutely. And it's sort of, I don't want to accuse one over another. I think that the key thing for me, what I'm noticing, is that there's one, I absolutely think that efforts are being made. I think that the gambling companies need to be seen to be making the effort more so than they actually are. I mean, another issue that's raised, and I man a helpline that people phone when they have a problem. And I don't know if you're aware, and you haven't mentioned in the course of this interview today, but the national regulator has its own helpline, and every regulated operator, including Sporting Bet, at the bottom of their website will have a clause that says, if you have a gambling problem, please contact the number. There's a WhatsApp number and there's an 0800 number if you have a problem. Now, for me, the first thing I would say is this is akin to when cigarettes first started having a warning sign that you needed a microscope to see. And then gradually that warning sign got bigger and bigger to the point that it's almost as big as the advertiser's logo now on the boxes.
Yeah.
My view is, and I see the adverts on TV, and again, I'm not singling out Sporting Bet. There's other operators that do a lot more advertising and marketing than Sporting Bet. It's on the TV for probably 2 seconds, and it is in such small writing you can't notice it. The other problem is I've had numerous people say that they have reached out to that 0800 number. And I don't know if you would be surprised or shocked to know that 9 times out of 10, that number just rings or it's out of order.
I'm both shocked.
Now, I don't know if you want to try that number, but I can tell you that at least 80% of the time people say, I've called, because then the regulator supposedly offers 4 free counseling sessions with a professional. Just remember, we're a fellowship of people that have a common desire to stop gambling. We're not professionals. I'm not paid. I'm not a professional psychologist. And a lot of times these people need... they need psychological assistance. It is a disease at the end of the day. And I don't think that whether it's the regulator or the operators that are paying their taxes and their subscriptions are policing that source of support comprehensively enough.
I'm going to go through some of the comments in via WhatsApp and then maybe either Larry or... Gail Hodges can respond. Casinos that are server-based can control slot payouts. I understand that, but this is Sporting Bets that we're talking about, so it's not the same principle that applies. Is that right?
Not the same, but okay. On the online platform again, these algorithms do exist where the third party is compliant to the regulator. So algorithms are in play, but certainly not on the.
But it sounds scalum. The accusation sounds like scalum. Casinos that are server based can control slot payout percentages. Larry, that sounds scalum to me.
I actually would disagree.
Oh.
I mean, at the end of the day, people need to understand that casinos are in business to make money. And and we're not talking about sports betting here. We're talking about casinos. The odds are always in favor. Whether you're gambling on an internet platform or you're actually in a physical casino, the odds are always against you. And the reality is that they don't fix it, but they're only going to pay out based on statistics and, and it's not as random as you might think, but at the end of the day, they might pay out 2 out of 10 spins, but they know that if R100 goes into a machine, they're going to pay out, 80% so that they have a 20% margin, whatever those numbers are. I don't know if they are, but that's how they all work. They're not trying to steal money, they're making it very clear. Your odds are against you.
Somebody writes, the only accounts any online operator will close are winning accounts. First-hand experience, said Brett. Then they close a lot of inactive accounts. I've stopped smoking and drinking cold turkey. I just can't stop gambling. There's a voice note. Let's take a listen to that as well. Not yet. Okay, we'll get to that. So please, just in to wrap up, Larry, you're saying just make it louder, the warning that comes with this practice. That's what you're saying first and foremostly.
I think there needs to be an element of responsibility in terms of marketing the product. I don't think that the gambling companies really comprehend the severity of the gambling problem and the impact that it causes on people's lives. My contention is that, and my experience, is that gamblers, the suicide rate amongst gambling addicts is higher than any other addiction. And I'll tell you why that is the case. It's because for most of the others, you're ingesting a foreign substance. So if someone's drunk, it's quite noticeable. If someone's high, they're quite noticeable. If someone's gambling, the physical impact, the physical effects are not as apparent, which means that the problem gets a lot worse before something's done about it.
Larry, it's important for us to have empirical evidence on problem gambling. Do we not have that? Is that what you're saying?
I don't think that the severity of gambling is recognized to the extent that it should be.
And that is maybe an indictment on especially the regulating authority. I have to ask you, Gail Odges, head of acquisition and sporting bet. It was necessary for us to look at the flip side of the very same coin. Just for a closing comment.
Yeah, I mean, I actually agree with Larry. I think greater accountability is needed, and not just with the regulator, but the operators as well. You know, it's not sustainable if we as operators are luring problem gamblers, because at the end of the day, we, like Larry said, we are a business.
Everybody
we want it
implodes.
To be sustainable. Yeah. We want to be able to pay tax and contribute to the GDP. I would also say that I'm speaking at a conference for regulators next week in KZN, and it's certainly a topic that we are raising and discussing on a quarterly basis. How can we collaborate to make this message louder? Mm-hmm. So I do agree with you, Larry.
Are you saying some more self-regulation there by the industry?
More self-regulation. The hotline that Larry mentioned that's ringing out. That's unacceptable.
And that shouldn't be the line of defense, is it?
Absolutely. So we need to hold the regulators accountable. The regulators need to hold the operators accountable. And as a combination, the industry has to protect problem gamblers.
Yeah. We're going to rest it there. Thank you for this insight, Gail Odges, head of acquisition at Sporting Bet, and certainly for your insights, Larry, from Gamblers Anonymous.